Do you want to build your brand by being a guest on industry-leading podcasts? If you're a business leader, an author, or a speaker, my guess is that you do. Picture this. You, a dynamic executive easily connecting with engaged audiences, turbocharging your top-of-funnel marketing, and creating a treasure trove of content with every episode. Podcasting is a game changer that you've been waiting for. And PodcastAlly.com is your VIP ticket to podcast PR success. Say goodbye to the ordinary and hello to the extraordinary exposure. Let the Podcast Ally team connect you with the best-in-class podcast for you to be a guest on. Head over to PodcastAlly.com and use the promo code DT for a 10% discount on Podcast Ally services. That's PodcastAlly.com, promo code DT. Welcome to High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. This season, we're diving deeper with more solo episodes, where I'll share the experiences that have led to recognition by EY, Forbes, Fast Company, and others. Not as a boast, but as milestones on my entrepreneurial path. From growing multi-million dollar firms to successful business exits and building high performance teams with a global perspective. I'll reveal the insights and strategies from my journey and share them with you so that we can win together. Alongside these solo episodes, we'll have industry visionaries and thought leaders, and we'll explore effective leadership. Ready to empower your leadership journey with real success stories? Let's embark on this transformational journey together. Today, I'm joined by Bob Batchelor, an award-winning communications strategist at the Diversity Movement. With a rich background in executive communications and content creation, Bob's mission is to spark lasting cultural change, fostering a more inclusive society, and helping businesses thrive. Beyond his impactful role, Bob is a critically acclaimed cultural historian and biographer, known for works on Stan Lee, Bob Dylan, The Great Gatsby, Mad Men, and John Updike. Thanks for coming on the show, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Don. Thanks for having me today on High Octane Leadership. Excited to be back on the podcast, and I'm super excited to be talking about one of your favorite topics, one of the topics that's really grown into my favorites as well, leadership teams and how leadership teams create culture-centric organizations. So looking forward to digging into this one.
I am as well, and we talk about this a lot, you and I, in terms of what we're writing about, talking about in the different things that we do together at the Diversity Movement. And I think that building high-performing teams is the secret sauce, right, in the new economy. There's so many different things that are changing, but one of the things that is constant, if you look across industries, size of business, length of time in business, is the impact of a high-performing leadership team on the success of that organization. And so, yeah, super happy and excited to dig into this topic.
I'll try not to be too esoteric because, you know, sometimes I get a little flighty on the theoretical parts because I love to dig into it so much. But I think where the rubber meets the road is it's leadership teams and the tools that they bring to those positions that then equal the outcome is employee engagement. And that seems to be a secret sauce as well. So let's dig in at leaders and leadership teams as role models. Let's talk about the role as role model, an example for your employees, being your direct reports, the whole organization.
You know, give an example in one of the companies I used to run, and I won't say the company name and different things. Just, you know, a lot of people listening might have been through it because it wasn't a, you know, great situation. But I had a situation to where I had one of my leaders was not acting appropriately with someone on their team. And it wasn't sexual. It wasn't anything like that. It was really more in tone, in harshness. It was more in how they were talking to that individual, right? In how they were treating them verbally, right? But it wasn't good. Right. Even though it's not the worst of things you could think about, it wasn't good. Right. And so I remember talking to my HR leader at the time. And I always tried to give folks in my organization space to give me real feedback.
I prefer it in private, right? But if it in public, you need to do it, right? If you really need to dig in. But she said very clearly, she said, Don, this is on you. And I was like, excuse me? I didn't do it. I didn't say it. I got really defensive. I was like, what are you talking about? And she said very succinctly, you endorse what you tolerate. And it stopped me in my tracks. And I had a very significant heart-to-heart with an executive on my team that at the risk of fracturing that relationship with this high-performing business leader. And we addressed the situation. But one of the things when you talk about role modeling, right, is when is the biggest impact of role modeling? It's what does the leader do to align to the values they prescribe in the toughest circumstances, right? And that's what I had to say as a leader, that I was tolerating something. I knew some of it was going on, but the results that were being delivered in this department superseded, right, all of the values that I was promoting. And I got called out on it. And so we had to address it, and we did. And so I was appreciative of, over the years, of people that I hired and worked with and partnered with that believed me and took me at my word that I want to win more than I want to be right. And that was an example. And I remember it vividly because it was a learning moment for me as well. And I think leadership is two major things. One, leadership is a relationship, the relationship you have with your team, with your team members, and how you grow that relationship so that you can be effective with leading teams. And then leadership is also a responsibility. And that responsibility in terms of modeling and role modeling is how do you take feedback and correction? How do you continue to become a competitive learner? How do you amplify and give credit to those on the team that did a great job, and it's not all about you? Another example that I'll give, and this was when I was working in the marketing space. And when you're running a boutique marketing firm, a couple $1 million in revenue, and you've got some pretty big clients, you know, you lose a $500,000 annual deal, it matters, right? It matters, right?
Yep.
So we were working at the time with a very large, multi-billion dollar global pharmaceutical company. And team was doing an amazing job. Our direct contact at the company was abrasive with our team, was talking down to them, was not treating them with that base level of respect we all deserve. Whether you're the vendor or the supplier, whether you're the manager or the rookie or the intern, we all should be treated in a human way that we leave our work every day feeling good. That doesn't mean if you're unhappy as a client, right, and you give us the business, right, it's fine as long as it's done in a professional manner. And this gentleman overstepped that line several times, and my team was a little hesitant to bring it to me. Because they knew how much revenue it was for. They knew how big it was financially for the business. And I remember it coming to a head, and two of the leaders on my team came in at the same time. I was like, oh, okay. What kind of meeting is this, right? And so they described the situation and said, Don, we think you need to get involved. This is a little bit much. And I said, I'm happy to get involved, but let me empower you to do this, say this, without any concern for the repercussions. Because I wanted them to get stronger in the process. But what I did was I definitively, at the risk of losing the business, let our team know they didn't have to take shit from anybody. That modeling did a couple things. It allowed them, see, most of the times, bullies operate unchallenged will stay bullies. Most bullies challenged are actually sheep. But because they go unchallenged, they operate as if they're getting stronger and stronger, right, in that mindset. And so all I allowed my team to be able to do in that moment was borrow my courage, that we would figure out the revenue shortfall if we had to blow this thing up. But we weren't going to allow our people to be disrespected, to be talked down to be talked as less than. that was different than the values of what they signed up for to work for us and our team. And so they went and handled it and reshaped the rules. And in the background of that, I talked to two levels above this individual and let them know what was happening. And we got it straight. But modeling in business as a leader is also about your responsibility to protect and care for the people that you lead. The leader's responsibility is the environment, the culture. What does culture mean? Culture is, do you have an environment where people feel like they can win at work, where they feel welcome? And even in times where they may have not done the work in the way that it should, do they get a chance to fix it? Can they improve? As a leader, you also have to say if somebody continually doesn't fix it, improve, that you have to do something different. Because one, two, three lower underperformers can't drag the whole train from people that are given everything they've got. But are people treated appropriately, professionally, fairly, and consistently? And so those are things when I think about leadership and high-performing teams, in my experience, when you talk about modeling, that modeling is most important in the pressure moments, when the decision that you make has real financial repercussions. And those are some of the things that I'm proud of in my career, that a lot to improve, a lot to work on. But holding a standard for how people need to be treated, holding a standard for winning in the workplace, and giving everybody that same opportunity to do so is one of the things I think I've done pretty well. But those are a couple of stories that, as I smile, as I think, because it could have went squirrely, right? That individual could have had more juice inside the organization, and we lost a $500,000 deal, right? It so happens that that behavior, we weren't the only ones experiencing it, and they were glad to have another organization step up and say, hey, this is a little bit too much, so that they could make a decision they needed to make. But those are some of the examples when I think about modeling.
Those are good. Those are really good examples, really boots on the ground kind of examples that give a good indication of how a leadership team or a leader themselves sets the tone for an organization. One of the things that I would really like your opinion on, because I know that you went through this, when people are climbing, you know, that ladder, that imaginary ladder or that real ladder through an organization, they're frequently given recognition, they're given promotions, things like that, because they're so great at a thing. Oh, you're a great salesperson. And so you just keep, you slowly become not a salesperson as much as then managing other salespeople. But that move from superstar to super leader, there's no refresher course. There's not a lot there for that person. So as we talk today about leadership tools and how leaders develop culture, what do you advise somebody in that position to do? And what have you seen? And, you know, maybe if you have a personal story, how this worked for you.
Yeah, Bob, thank you so much for that question. In my experience, there's a couple of elements that we all run into, and that's whether that's that superstar salesperson, that amazing creative, that phenomenal developer. The skills to lead a team are different than the skills to be a phenomenal individual contributor. And one of the mistakes that we make as leaders in building leadership teams is we only create an environment where people can move up based on the number of people they lead versus the number of projects they impact. So what we had to do is, and a lot of companies have done this for technologists, for example, is they've created a technical fellows program so that individual contributors could work on bigger and brighter technologies, bigger and better projects, but they weren't forced to get more stock options, to get promoted, to move up in the organization, being forced to be a people leader, which was not their lane. The worst thing you can do is take your top sales professional, make them a sales manager. Now they're doing administrative work. They're looking at geography, marketing, just all kinds of different stuff, but that's not their development path. First, taking that sales superstar and helping them groom and mentor other folks in that line. And so a lot of times what we do as leaders on leadership teams is we don't think about the skills required for the role. Oh, it's time. They've hit this checkbox. Now they should be a manager. When in reality, we need to be focused on the skills, the personality, and the career goals of that individual and make sure we have alignment so that people can become amazingly talented, amazingly well-rewarded and promoted based on the skills they provide to the organization, not based on the boxes that the organization creates. And I'm guilty of both things. The only thing I would say is I learned from it quickly, right? When I saw the mistake that I made, and I made it a couple of times, I created an environment to reconfigure because it really was something that is done by kind of corporate habit versus doing what's right by the individual and what's best for the business. And so we do have to separate those individual superstars that have immense talent and give them a path where their technology or their creativity continue to flow and create a different path for those folks that are going to be phenomenal people leaders.
That's great. That's really helpful. I think it's a different way of looking at advancement that I don't think the business world generally has caught up to yet. And it's you need different paths for different kind of people. The C-suite might not be the end goal for somebody that's really talented.
If you think about it, I was reading an article, Bob, and it was talking about burnout in the C-suite and mental well-being of leaders and different things. And I know as an entrepreneur, as an investor, and sitting on boards watching, I get to interact with lots of leaders. The temperament and skill to get to the C-suite is different than it takes to stay there successfully. When you're on the climb for something, you have that accomplishment momentum, right? And you don't really know all the pressures of being in that top C-suite position. So you don't know. You think you know, right? Everybody looks at their manager or leaders like, I can do that, right? I have the same skill. In fact, I have more skill about technology or marketing or different things, right, than my boss. I mean, how many people listen to that are smarter than their boss, their manager, their senior VP, their leader? Everybody, right? But the reality is it's not about smarts. It's about emotional intelligence. It's about how do you manage pressure. It's about how do you manage ambiguity. It's about how do you manage situations that are seen and unseen and look around the corners. It's about how do you understand as an individual that every single decision you make in a given day, 50% of the people are going to like it, 50% of the people are going to hate it every day. So most people at the C-suite that are successful, it's about leadership temperament. It's about emotional intelligence. And yes, a certain amount of technical or creative or operational acumen, depending on what the role is, but it has a lot more to do with leadership. It has a lot more to do with mentorship and moving groups of people in the right positions and examples. And that's one of the things that we get disconnected because sometimes I'll find people that I was looking to promote that would say, Don, that's not what I want for my goals. Here's how much time I want to spend with my family. I remember, plain as day. I wanted to promote this individual. He's a technologist. And he said, Don, tell me about the job requirements. And he's like, okay, I got that. Tell me about the hours commitments. And he's like, Don, he said, I don't mind working a good 45 hours a week, 50 hours a week when it's required. We got a deadline. But I love working on my cars after work and on the weekends. And so for me, work needs to fit in a finite box. And in that box, I want to do everything you need. I want to do everything that's required and then some. But then I want to shut that off. And I want to go and work, be with my family. And then I want to go and I want to work on my cars and my hobbies. And I totally respected it. And I absolutely didn't want to lose this top performer from where they were in the organization. And because they were very clear and didn't take on the peer pressure of wanting to be promoted for promotion's sake, we didn't create a go forward strategy, right, that would negatively impact them or the business. But most people, they take the promotion, they go after promotion because status is so much more important than good decision making sometimes. And we all have to resist that.
Yeah, and I think when I hear that story, I think a lot of people based on generation would be nervous about that situation. Because, say, if we even go back the early 2000s, if you were given the opportunity to be promoted or some... Okay, so if you were given the opportunity to be promoted, you probably had to take it. And second, you would never, ever tell your manager that there was something on your mind other than your job. You might have all the best intentions, the best hobbies in the world, but it was like your life didn't exist outside of work.
It's Bob, it's so interesting that you say that, and I think that's real. I think it's one of the things that Gen Z and millennials have taught those of us that have a little bit more gray hair, or in my case, I just went ahead and cut everything off and stopped and took the L. Is they will articulate what they want and what their commitment levels are and what's important to them. And sometimes I'll be really direct. It takes me aback. I'm like, not in the situation I described, but some of the things I hear, you know, today and different things. But I think it's good. I think transparency and openness is good. Now, where it falls short is when people describe to me work-life balance, work-life integration they want, and then the amount of money they want, and then the speed of promotion they want. And I'm like, man, how are you going to do all those things? That's magic. I had to do things with a lot more hard work than that. So sometimes, like, there's this conflict of reality, right, that meets with. But for the most part, it's really good open dialogue. And I think that leaders really have to study, and I don't mean study like book, I mean listen to folks from different generations than them. Because it doesn't mean they don't care about the company, but work is a different level of significance in the totality of their life and many folks. And as leaders, we have to get good at aligning our styles with the personalities, the goals, the generations of the teams that we lead. And so back to what makes a high-performing leadership team right now is that team's ability to relate to a global audience, but also a very diverse audience, both ethnically, culturally, but also, right, generationally. And it's really hard. And a lot of leaders are struggling with that because they grew up in an environment, right, where what the boss said was golden. You work hard, meet the objectives, keep your mouth shut, don't complain too much, and you'll move up. And now we're talking about empathy and transparency and all this other stuff. And leaders are having to come to grips with the fact that they're not going to be able to get high productive teams without learning these new soft skills.
Yeah, that's an amazing point and right on the mark. What we're seeing, you know, certainly when TDM created TDM LeaderView, which is a whole team assessment, you know, how do leaders engage with one another as leaders, not just their individual talents. I think one of the reasons that it was created was so that we could help teams that are crossing cultural boundaries. So I wonder if you could talk for a minute about that, because I know both in your work, I know at Workplace Options, you're dealing with an international sales team, international sales leader, as an executive coach, one of the architects of LeaderView. You're engaged deeply in this cross-cultural. So what do you think, what's the CEO's responsibility in all of this from your perspective?
You know, when we think about LeaderView and why we created it, that cultural competency assessment tool, that whole team model that you're talking about, is because we want to help our clients win. And what we saw in the marketplace is there's a lot of tools out there that talk about your individual productivity, 360 disc, all these stuff. And I don't want to go into a sales pitch, but you ask why we did something. So I'll share with you why. Is there wasn't something we saw in the market that looked at the chemistry of the team across the different silos. And one of the big things that impacts employee engagement is when leadership teams are fighting against one another and siloed. And there's not one brand, one mission. There's 15 different missions based on who your boss is and what kind of fiefdom they're trying to create and what kind of politics are trying to be created. And that's fine. I can't fix everyone's business, but clients of ours that we want to be successful in the marketplace, where we want to take diversity, equity, inclusion and link it clearly to the positive business impact to do three things: help you make money, save money, and reduce your risk. And that means we've got to teach your leadership team inclusive language so they don't say dumb things on purpose that can get you sued and increase employee engagement, right? Like, let's be basic with what we're trying to do with leadership teams. We're going to teach you how to talk differently, right? Then we work on how do you give and receive feedback so you can create true openness. All kinds of companies have transparency and authenticity in their mission statements, but no one's teaching their leaders how to live it, how to do it on a daily basis. So then the employee looks at that on the website and says, oh my gosh, that sounds good. And then they go into a meeting and no one gives them a chance to speak. They don't get a chance to influence the conversation. And they look back at the website and they say, that's just BS. It's cool marketing stuff, but that's not what my experience is. So what we have to do with leadership teams to create that high impact is that we operate at the same level of care that our marketing slicks talk about. And that means we have to really dig into each moment we have with people is a way that we can expand the goodness and the power of our culture, or that we can impact it in a negative way. I'll give an example on our team, a very specific example. And it was surprising to me, even though it shouldn't have been, and I had to learn from it. There were some folks on one of our teams, they showed me something in a meeting, and I didn't love it. Didn't like it, didn't think it was good, I didn't love it. And I communicated that, and I communicated it with a little bit of tempo, and cost myself about 2 weeks of productivity. Lots of discussions. Because in today's business environment, you have to walk people through why you don't like something. What's the best next step? All the other things that you do like about the work that they're doing. That it's and as a leader, you're like, oh my God, I don't have that kind of time. You're either going to take the time to lead and communicate well, or you're going to lose the time and not see it in the crosstalk, in the lack of productivity, and all the other stuff that happens when people don't feel heard, when people don't feel seen, when they feel like they were talked to in a way that wasn't productive. And so I went through that process, pulled those folks together, walked through what I liked, didn't like, recalibrated, and apologized for the tempo part. I didn't apologize that I got something that wasn't good, because it wasn't. And there's no good flowery words that were going to make it good. But I could have shared my feedback in a much more constructive way. Now, here's the thing that people don't understand about leaders. What financial meeting did I just leave? My team members didn't know we were in the process of deciding whether to sell the company at that same time. Most people have no idea what their leader is thinking through. I didn't feel good that meeting, leader bad. Now, I'm not ranting over that because that's the job I chose. So I got to own that. I got to eat that. I got to rise above that. But I would say for those listening that are in the emerging space, you know, sometimes your leader's got a lot going on. And the thing they may say that rubs you wrong, it may not have anything to do with you. And it may serve people well to not personalize everything to the 100th degree. Now, the reason I'm proud of our culture is both of these folks talk to their managers, talk to HR. I got five different emails. a couple different conversations. Like literally, it cost me 10 hours. I won't do it again. Does that make sense? I'm learned. It cost me 10 hours in conversations to put it back together versus 10 minutes to be more thoughtful in the way I delivered the feedback. So purely from a business perspective, 10 minutes versus 10 hours, I'm going to get my junk together for 10 minutes, right? Does that make sense? Yes. I want to, I believe in it. But even for those that are listening that are like, man, we're making people too soft. What about all this woke stuff? Why do you have to do all this? Let's break this down. 10 minutes or 10 hours? You choose. And that's how I talk to the high-octane leaders that are like me, that don't want to listen, that are hard-headed. I'm like, 10 minutes or 10 hours? You're going to pay the cost. Because that water cooler is real. And now it's digital. You got a digital water cooler. That means it can hit more people at the click of a button, how you behaved in that meeting. So leadership being the example, and back to the thing I'm proud about the teams I lead, is I really do try to create an environment where I'm glad that these team members felt comfortable sharing their concerns with their managers. It got back to me and we got it resolved. That's important to me, right? Because I want to model an organization where everybody needs to get better and everybody should have the space to get better, including the leader. I'm not talking about immoral, unethical, like the extreme things, right? For those things, call your employment lawyer, do what you got to do. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those daily interactions that can rub us wrong or another, that grow culture or pull from culture, that if we all work together a little bit better and leaders learn how to take feedback as well as give it, right? And I've had to learn that. I think those things, we can all get better together in a real way. And I'm very, even though when I replay that situation, I'm still like, I understand it, but I'm like, man, my intent was not the way it landed, right? But it doesn't matter. It landed froggy and we had to fix it. And leaders have to understand that our amplification power of our words, of our actions, are 100 to 1,000 times of any other level of employees. So we got to be better. And I'm happy to be reminded of areas where I got to be better. And it doesn't feel good, but it's worth it. Sometimes I can get defensive still. Like, I'm human. Right? But I'm trying to be a more thoughtful human, right? I still have reactions, emotions, different things like that, but I don't let those things, those biases get in the way of learning how to be better.
No, I appreciate that, Don. That's a very honest answer and helpful. And I appreciate you sharing, and I'm sure the listeners will as well. That leads into my final point, my final question that I want to talk about. What do you think, and this is a hopefully not too much of a two-parter, but one, it seems to me, and I've been around a lot of leadership teams at a lot of different size companies, that there historically has just been a lack of trust among that group of leaders. And it's really, it's mind-boggling. And then the flip side is, If there's a lack of trust among the leaders, how do we then push out trust as a foundational tenet of a culture-centric organization? So how do we flip? Why does one exist, and how do we fix it and then push it out in an authentic way?
Yeah, that's one of the really difficult things, but just because it's difficult doesn't mean we avoid it, right? Because at the end of the day, what we're trying to build right now in an engaged workforce is trust and loyalty. And so I'm going to give an example. Trust combined with loyalty, when you have a high performer that's looking at other opportunities, is they'll give you an opportunity to address their legitimate concerns before they move on. Because they trust that you're not going to retaliate against them because they share it. They are loyal enough to what you've done for them as a company and care enough about their own career to say, hey, if a couple things don't change, I'm going to need to move on. But those conversations only occur with people that you've built trust with over the years. Where trust doesn't occur is the employee leaves and you only know what they think on the exit interview after they've quit. And so back to leaders, what we have to do is, number one, when you're on a leadership team, the CEO's responsibility is to build a cohesive team of one, team one, not team of one, team one. Because most leaders, and I've had this example recently, I'm working with a multinational client now, where I was talking to one of their top leaders, their highest revenue producing department head. And he said very candidly, he said, Don, until we discussed this and met with a team and went through this leadership training, I thought my responsibility was only to my leader and the results that are in my comp plan. I didn't think about my responsibility to my team members and my teammates. And CEOs are responsible for creating an environment, both in terms of how people feel, but also how people are compensated. Because at the end of the day, in corporations, coin operation is a part of who we are, right? Like, we're operated by how we're compensated, how we're bonused, different things like that. If there's no bonus for collaboration, if there's no bonus for employee wellness, if there's no bonus for anything other than meeting the financial numbers, then that's the kind of behavior you're going to get in the business. So the CEO's job, the board's job, is to make sure that cultural competency, which impacts employee engagement, which impacts the bottom line, is called out in the compensation of business leaders, right? And it's like, it sounds simple, but when you're used to just thinking about business as a financial transaction, it's a hard switch. But those are some of the things that I encourage leaders to do at the C-suite level structurally, right? And then the second thing is, how do you build trust over a video screen? We can do a transaction, right? But you trust people you spend time with. You trust people you know about their family, their motivations, their struggle, their story, right? But we don't give enough time for that in today's corporate setting, and I think it's a big miss. That doesn't mean you need to have some kind of kumbaya party every month or anything like that. It means that when you're having a corporate retreat, one of the things that could be really impactful is give people to share something non-business about themselves, about their family. What motivates them? What makes them tick? One of the things that we did as we were forming the diversity movement and building our leadership team is we created user guides as individuals. And we wrote down what our quirks are, what makes us tick, what some of our pet peeves are. And so all of our leaders have that for one another. And I think CEOs are responsible for so much these days that this question really is the CEO in partnership with their chief human resource officer, right? Their head of people ops, things of that nature, to make sure that we have standards of excellence from a fiscal standpoint, but we also have standard of excellence for how we're going to treat individuals and people, how we're going to grow and motivate, so that those things align together. And I am super appreciative of that question because it means a lot. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to grow in that area.
That's great, Don. Thank you. I appreciate that. Another great example of boots on the ground, forming and building trust and then pushing it outward. You know, what can I say? Another great podcast, another great conversation. Deeply appreciate it and can't wait to listen to this one back and take a look at the transcript. I really appreciate it.
Bob, it's always good to talk to you. And I tell Jackie, who we're all friends, but I feel smarter when I hang out with Bob. Like, and because you're cool, you're not full of yourself, but like, you're scary smart. Right? You're one of the few people that, like, it's not just the PhD, it's the PhD in action, right? And how do you take that knowledge and do something with it? And so I have a great time chatting with you, and thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Don, I'm going to use the last 10 seconds of this, and I'm going to send this to my teenage daughters, just so that you know.
That's awesome. See you, Bob.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on High Octane Leadership with Donald Thompson. Today's episode is a step in our collective journey towards leadership excellence. Remember, every story we share and every insight we gain is a piece in the puzzle of our leadership journey. For more insight and detail, hit the subscribe button so that we can stay connected. For deeper information and more episodes, go to donaldthompson.com. Continue to lead with vision and purpose, and until we meet again, embrace your role as a high-octane leader in the ever-evolving world of business.